All right, let's go. We are joined today by a few amazing people. First of all, Representative Maxwell Frost, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing okay. You know, we're in a tough situation in the House, but we're going to keep fighting. We got a 1 a.m. hearing coming up. I'm sure we'll talk more about that. But my spirits are up because we're gonna continue to fight back against this evil budget they're trying to push through.
The youngest member of Congress, making all Gen Zers proud, endless energy. I love political knife fighters, people who are out there and are willing to just, you know, punch back a little bit. You, Jasmine Crockett. We are also joined by Dean Withers, one of the most influential, largest Gen Z creators. How are you doing today, man?
I'm doing all right. It's so good to be here. You know, we're speaking briefly for a moment before the stream started in the waiting room. You know, I'm very happy to be in the presence of you both. And I think today will end up being a very beneficial event for everyone. So I just appreciate both of you guys for being here.
Yeah, so I guess the reason you should care about this event, if you're watching, just to kick this off, is because we'll have seven consecutive panels of people who are like-minded and are working to fight authoritarianism as it spreads throughout the mainstream. Every single media source you could tune into, whether, I don't know, like if you're a young dude and you're trying to watch workout videos on Instagram, you get sucked down this pipeline to RFK Jr. Or if you're looking up dating advice, you get sucked down this pipeline to Andrew Tate. So we want to provide some moral clarity at a time like this. Let's start off with Representative Frost. Can you tell me what you've been seeing on the ground, you know, in Congress? How have people been feeling about this fight against Trump and authoritarianism? Tell me a little bit about the big ugly bill coming up.
Well, you know, I've been on this national tour with Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut, who I actually met when I was 15 years old after the Sandy Hook shooting happened. And I met him at the vigil that was going on. And over 10 years later now, we're both in Congress. We've been traveling the country, going to Republican districts and speaking with the people in districts where the congressperson refuses to do a town hall. Because what's happening is Republicans in Congress are trying to pass this thing. They're calling it the big, beautiful bill, but it's really the big, ugly bill. It's a bill to rip away health care from millions of Americans, to rip away nutritional and food assistance from millions of Americans, to do all these cuts. And you think, wow, we're doing these cuts to make sure that our country is more, you know, fiscally sound and et cetera. We can help more people. But no, they want to do all these cuts so they can give billionaires and mega corporations a massive tax cut. It's the age-old thing of these Republicans working to make the poor poor and the rich richer. And so we're fighting against it. But I'll tell you, as I've traveled the country and I've spoken with people face-to-face, I've spoken with people who voted for Trump. I've voted for people who are Democrats, Republicans, progressives, moderates, all across the spectrum. And everybody's pissed off because they're seeing the day-to-day impact of all these cuts. And also the fact that all these cuts are just to make the rich even richer hurts even more to people across the political spectrum. So I'll tell you, even though times are tough with all the fighting that we're doing, I do feel a sense of optimism because the people are really rising up and we're not going to take this. We're not going to take this shit from them. We're going to fight for the programs that help our people and help our families.
You got to hit your push to talk button.
Oh, my bad. My bad. I was cooking for a second there. But yeah, very well said. And I think that one of the silver bullet arguments when it comes to Elon Musk and the cuts and the consolidation of power is that after Trump took office, over 40 different regulatory investigations were either paused or halted or slow walked all into Elon Musk's companies. It's just blatant corruption. I want to pass it over to Dean. You talk to Trump supporters on a daily basis. Can you tell me what you've been hearing? How are you fighting against authoritarianism?
Of course, that's a great question. So I've been speaking with Americans that support Donald Trump since before the election until now. In fact, immediately before I joined both of you here on this event, I had spent 4 hours talking to Americans that support Donald Trump. And I've noticed this continual trend of these people that support the president, slimming. I find it much harder for me to find individuals who are devout Trump supporters today like I might have been able to before the election, which is something we should be optimistic about, but B, more defensive of some of the craziest things that a president can do. I seriously see America getting to a point where there is people out there that will look at Donald Trump illegally deporting Abrigo Garcia, then they will read the order that came from SCOTUS on April 10th, 2025, calling it illegal. And they will say, I don't care what SCOTUS has to say because I follow Trump's law. And in fact, I see the sentiment all the time, even as it relates to maybe his use of the Alien Enemies Act. They say it's the best thing we've had since sliced bread, even though SCOTUS has told Trump he can't use it as it relates to specific groups of immigrants because it's defined their due process. And they will just bend the knee and keel over for economic policy, which hurts them as it only is intended to help those making over $395,000 per year. And it's an issue. I think it's a problem of propaganda in mainstream media. I think it's a problem of mob mentality and just wanting to exist as a part of a group, to have other like-minded individuals as yourself, but not really to seek truth or to make America a greater place. And I think having these discussions, being able to point out those problems, have true, honest, and transparent conversations about how bad it's gotten, and how, yes, this is authoritarianism, how, yes, we are bleeding into fascism, and that is a claim made not because I'm a crazy liberal, but rather because I can read, acknowledge, and understand the 14 tenets of fascism as it's defined in the literature, is incredibly important for the future success of this country. And I love to see so many individuals having these conversations and being more outspoken and proud in their defiance of Trump and saying that this administration is not for the people, but for them and themselves alone. And yeah.
Yeah, when it comes to due process, I love when Republicans will inverse reality and say that 9-0 Supreme Court ruling was actually in favor of Trump. But then when you press them on it, they concede they don't even care about due process anyways. Representative Frost, you went to El Salvador, right? You went to go visit CECOT. Can you tell us a little bit about what you saw on the ground there?
Well, yeah, I did go to El Salvador. I went with three other members of Congress, including Congressman Robert Garcia. The reason we went is because what we're seeing in front of us, it wasn't even just about Abrego Garcia himself, even though he's very representative of what's going on right now. But I represent many immigrants, people of different statuses. And I'll tell you that when Kilmer Abrego Garcia was sent to El Salvador, I had constituents literally coming up to me as I'm at the store, walking around the community, saying, he represents me. Like, what happened to him, I'm scared it's going to happen to me. I'm scared it's going to happen to my daughter, my abuela, my grandma, my grandpa. And when we started receiving literally hundreds of letters, emails, calls, texts, DMs from constituents, people who live in my district, saying, do something about this, I'm scared. And then when Donald Trump went to the White House and said in the Oval Office that he wants to send homegrowns next, U.S. citizens, to gulags in other countries for and completely not give them due process, that's really when I completely drew a line and said, no, it's not enough for me to just denounce this from here, but I need to go there. Number one, of course, to shine light on this issue and how it can impact anyone, but also to ask questions about where Kilmer is, try to figure out if he was moved to a different prison, at least so his family can know. And also to, again, completely shine light on the fact that the administration is ignoring a Supreme Court decision and completely acting outside the bounds of the law. And I think it's hilarious. We see all this hypocrisy from the Republicans in Congress and Donald Trump, even right now, as they are doing something that's never been done before. The Department of Justice is charging a sitting member of Congress, LaMonica McIver, because she went to an ICE facility to do her job and provide oversight on what's going on there. And now they're charging her with a crime. And I posted about this yesterday, and I have a ton of, like, MAGA cultists in my comments saying, oh, it's about the rule of law, the rule of law. If you care so much about the rule of law, tell Donald Trump to stop deporting people with zero due process. And the thing that's really frustrating to me is this. The right talks a lot about American exceptionalism, but then they want to do nothing to protect what actually makes our country exceptional and different. And one of those things is the fact that our Constitution doesn't have a thing that says, by the way, everything you just read only applies to certain people. No. The First Amendment, the ability to have freedom of speech applies to everyone, college students, even if you're here on a visa, right? The right to due process is something afforded to every person in the United States. These rights being afforded to everybody here are part of what makes America the country it is and makes us exceptional. And so I went to El Salvador on behalf of our rights, and I'm really glad I went. I'm going to be honest. It was a lot of the trip was sad and depressing to hear about just the treatment of folks that we're sending over there. At least we were able to get some new information on the exact jail that Kilmar was moved to. But again, it's not just about him. It's about the lawlessness we're seeing from the Trump administration and this march toward an authoritarian government. I'd say we're already in an authoritarian government that is using the federal police, using the state to send people to other countries just because they disagree with their free speech, to charge sitting members of Congress for dissenting against the Trump administration. I don't care if you're consider yourself to be a conservative or progressive or moderate or anything. You have to stand up against authoritarianism, especially because right now it might be targeting the people you disagree with. But it's a slippery slope, and at any time it can target anybody. And so we all have to care about this and speak out against it.
And that last point you made is that last point you made is the key one, because people always ask, why should I care about this? Once you create a new class of people with no due process, you can place anybody in that bucket. You can endlessly justify placing anyone in that bucket. And we've seen the Trump admin, as you said, attacking, you know, every single check, judges, courts, universities, law firms, multiple law firms have bent the knee. And I guess I want to pass it over to Dean. I know that you're super well-read on the first Trump administration. I've seen you debate about it endlessly. What surprised you over the past 115 days? Like, for example, on day one, when he pardoned all of the January Sixers, I remember genuinely being upset. So, Dean, what's, like, really surprised and upset you so far?
Well, the first question there, what has surprised me? I don't have a response to that because it hasn't surprised me. I think that myself, as well as every other person in America, had enough knowledge to know that something like this was bound to happen and that it will only get worse the moment Donald Trump tried to install himself for a second presidency on January 6, 2021, the moment he sent those fake slates of electorates to the swing states, the moment he tried to install fake votes for himself in Congress to serve a second term against the voice and the vote of the people, and then the moment he admitted to it in proceedings in front of the Supreme Court and in Congress, but just simply said he should not face criminal immunity, was the moment I knew, as well as hopefully the moment where I wanted everybody else to know, that he has no care for the rule of law. He has no care for the Constitution. He has no care for constitutional rights. This idea of him being pro-law and order and anti-corruption and crime is nothing more than a mask or a disguise to appeal to his base. And when he pardoned those January Sixers, I was hoping that would just make the words that are coming out of my mouth today clear to everybody, but unfortunately they didn't. It's only under a Trump presidency where undocumented migrants are persecuted to the extent of having their constitutional rights stripped from them forcefully and sent to terroristic prisons on the basis of an allegation because of an illegal entry into this country.
Push to talk. Click push to talk.
But simultaneously, if you illegally beat up a cop and drove a stun gun into their neck, such as DJ Rodriguez did on January 6th, you get called a patriot and then let out of jail by Donald Trump. It is so surprising to me that every single American hasn't woken up to the same revelations I'm sharing right now, and very sad as well. And you said that frustrated you when it occurred. It should have frustrated everyone. And the fact that it hasn't is why I'm here.
That is a surprising part, that not everyone has woken up. And that was the first thing he did on day one. Like, at least he ended the Ukraine war first, right? Oh, wait, no, he didn't. At least he lowered prices first. He didn't do either of those things. Representative Frost, how are you communicating with people when you're like, okay, so this is my question. When I talk to people, like young Trump supporters, about Elon Musk gutting these institutions, they always say, I feel disenfranchised. These institutions aren't helping me in the first place. How do you describe that a lot of these institutions are necessary, even if they're bloated?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think a big part of it is bringing it home for people. We have to bring it home and talk about, like, and this is the thing I would talk to my colleagues all the time about. We actually shouldn't be seen as a party that is trying, and the people that are trying to defend the status quo, because the status quo sucks. And there's a lot more we need to do to make this country work for everyone. However, there are a lot of things that people before us have fought for generations, so that way we have some helpless working people to be able to get through here. And so for me, it's less about defending institutions, but it's more about defending the programs and the people that those programs help. And so, for instance, on the Department of Education, right, it's not about defending the Department of Education. It's about defending Head Start. It's about defending Title I funding, right? It's about ensuring that we can have good rural education for students who don't live in cities, and that we have resources for students with disabilities. So I really talk about the programs more than the building itself, and that helps people realize, like, whoa, I've been fed a ton of BS in terms of what the Department of Education does. It's the same thing when I talk about what's going on with the VA. I mean, when we keep the conversation to a thing in DC, it is a lot easier for somebody like Donald Trump to just lie to his supporters about what's going on. But when a veteran goes into their local VA and their favorite front desk person has recently been fired for absolutely no reason, and it's taking longer and longer and longer for them to get the care that they deserve, it's hard for someone like Donald Trump in an ivory tower in DC to be able to spin that. And by spin that, I mean to be able to essentially lie about that and make it fit his narrative. And that's really what I found in my travels is more and more. And I think part of the reason why Dean has mentioned that it's harder and harder to find kind of these people who are like ride or die Trump is because I think people are starting to feel things at home. And it is hard to lie to someone about something they're seeing in front of their very own eyes. And so for me, it's bringing it home for people. We got to stop talking about this in the abstract. There's nothing abstract about money being taken away from the mouths of children because people, single mothers won't be able to get nutritional assistance anymore. We're talking about like $7 a day to help like a family feed people because we can all agree that the system right now as it is not set up for us. And Donald Trump lied when he said he was going to make it the golden age for America. He's making it the golden age for the billionaires and the dark ages for everybody else.
Dude, that's what I've been saying lately as well, that Elon's making the government more efficient for himself and his own companies. Exactly. Especially this, the one where all of these regulatory investigations are just paused or halted after Trump fired the inspectors general. Clear public intimidation. Dean, I actually want to know how you'd respond to the same question. Say you're debating a Trump supporter, and like, not even the illegality of it. Of course, Elon Musk subverted the power of the purse. Of course, Elon Musk subverted the Constitution. They don't care about that. How do you explain that some of these programs are actually necessary? What's your argument?
Well, this is a way that I like to address it to the average Trump supporter that comes on my live. The Trump administration with the Department of Government Efficiency will still be spending more of your hard-earned money than Kamala Harris's administration without the Department of Government Efficiency. So these projections are coming from the Congressional Budget Office. All of Donald Trump's proposed policies estimated to cost somewhere in between $10 and $15 trillion. Keeping in mind, around $6 to $8 trillion of that $10 to $15 trillion is just for tax cuts, which disproportionately benefit the most wealthy of those among us, right? Meanwhile, we look over at what Kamala Harris had proposed for her presidency. We were looking at maybe $6 to $8 trillion of overall new debt-related spending, with the majority of that being spent on tax cuts for you and 100 million American workers just like you. So when the Trump administration will boast about how efficiently they're cutting down these programs, even though they have no clue what those programs are or how they benefit Americans, at the end of the day, he is going to turn around and spend trillions more than he could ever cut. Elon said the most they could cut it is around $1 trillion on systems that benefit the millionaires and the billionaires. So I don't even find it efficacious to try to sit there and describe to some of these rather dense people I'll speak with about what the particular systems are that are being cut. I leave that to those that are significantly more knowledgeable than I am and just simply point out the fact that at the end of the day, our government's going to be spending more money than it would have if he wasn't elected. And I mean, that same trend was true in his first term too. According to the CRBF, the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, they spent $8.6 trillion. You look at Biden and Harris, they were down at $4.6 trillion. This myth of being fiscally conservative, wanting to cut down on the wasteful expenditure of our government, vanished with the start of Donald Trump's first administration. The fact of the matter is today, the party that's not only focused on ensuring that there is good and efficacious social safety nets to provide for those that are the most needy around us, not only ensuring that the purchasing power is in the hands of the workers, in the hands of the average American, but also ensuring that we are keeping our government expenses lower than that of the other party, is the Democrats, is the left, is the liberals, 110%. It is Trump who's bloating our federal expenditure. He's just hiding that and masking that under this guise of the DOG.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks for hosting this. I know there are a few panels after this, so make sure you stick around and enjoy it. I really enjoyed chatting with Dean and Representative Frost. I think that this is the way forward. I've been to a few panels and been to a few DC events where it's just like having a bunch of people in the same place working towards the same goal really energizes you and makes you feel like, I don't know, we're going to win again and we're going to come back stronger. Whenever there's a time of crisis is when you kind of reevaluate. Like during COVID, we did a little bit of a reset to see where we can go forward. That's what the party's doing right now. And I think the best communicators are rising to the top. And I'm glad that we all get to be a part of that. So that's all I have to say. Find me youtube.com/Adam Mockler.
I'll hop in here real quick. Both Adam and Congressman, it was a pleasure to be able to be on this panel with both of you, very similar to what Adam said. It's awesome. It's so cool that there's people out there that are willing to use their voice to be loud and stand against the Trump administration. And more than just using your voice, you, Mr. Congressman, are, you know, using your physical exertion of labor at the Capitol. And I think that's quite admirable. If you want to find me really anywhere, Dean Withers on all socials. And to the organizers of the event, thank you so much. And to Adam and Congressman, thank you so much for your time on this panel with me.
Yeah, great to be on here with everybody. And I would just encourage everyone, just figure out a way that you can get involved and fight against these fascists and these authoritarians. And to something that Dean said earlier that I think is important. This can't just be about fending off what's going on now. We have to keep in mind the world we want to build. Because I'll tell you, for people who don't know my story, I ran for Congress at 24 years old and was elected at 25. And I'm in my second term. The reason I kind of gave up my 20s to be a congressman is not just to defend the things we have, but because I actually believe in a world, in an America, that lives up to its promise. And that's what I believe in. Ending gun violence, fighting the climate crisis, one job being enough, and making sure that working people are able to have really their basic necessities met so they can start their business, they can do what they want to do in life. And I think we can achieve that. I think we can do all this. But we need to continue to fight for it. And we got to stand up for the future we want, not just the future or not just the present that we're defending. And so I think we can do all this at the same time. So just get involved, run for office. I got to plug an organization called Run for Something. If you're thinking about running for state and local office, we need you to do it because we need to build the bench. So that way, when a young person gets elected to Congress, it's not a big deal because young people get elected to Congress all the time. We need more people to do this. So get involved, y'all. Thank you for tuning in. If you want to keep up with me, I'm at Maxwell Frost, FL, on everything.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We really appreciate it. This is the first of its kind event that we've done, all volunteer, really trying to connect you guys, Adam and Dean, with these great audiences and voices, with folks like Congressman Frost, who are fighting the good fight on the front lines. And thank you for being our initial panel and kicking this off. You guys are great. We're going to be here fighting alongside with you guys all the way through, and we hope to do this again.
Thank you, guys. That was great.
Thanks. Thank you.
It was great. Have a good one, you guys.